Joy and I have divided our homily today into two parts. She will be talking about the title for the service, the soul of the ICUU, and I will talk about the work of the ICUU. I'll lead off with a brief reading. From the preamble to the Constitution of the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists. We, the member groups of the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists, affirming our belief in religious community based on liberty of conscience and individual thought in matters of faith, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice and compassion in human relations, responsible stewardship of the Earth's living systems, and our commitment to democratic principles, declare our purposes to be to serve the infinite spirit of life and the human community by strengthening the worldwide Unitarian and Universalist faith, to affirm the variety and richness of our living traditions, to facilitate mutual support among member organizations, to promote our ideals and principles around the world, and to provide models of liberal religious response to the human condition which uphold our common values. These high-sounding affirmations and purposes have been and continue to be a challenge to carry out. Consider our resources. We have an unpaid 7-member board consisting of people from the U.S. and Canada, from Spain, Germany, and Romania, and from South Africa and India. We meet face-to-face twice a year. We have a half-time executive secretary, a newsletter editor who receives a modest stipend, and a host of dedicated volunteers who do much of the work in organizing projects and events. Our annual budget is less than Beacon's. So, given these modest resources, what have we actually accomplished over the last 11 years? Well, quite a bit, actually. Week-long leadership training sessions held in various parts of the world. One theological symposium with a second in the works. The first ever meeting of the heads of Unitarian schools of theology from around the world. Youth conferences. In conjunction with the UUA and the Partner Church Council, partner church development in India and the Philippines, a new ICUU curriculum, multinational conferences, one in Europe and two in South America so far, a variety of books, pamphlets, and booklets, some of which are on display here, tours of important Unitarian sites, mostly in Europe, a commemorative workshop on Michael Savitas in Geneva, visits and encouragement to emerging groups in various parts of the world, an ICUU website featuring, among other things, worship resources for member groups in many lands, assistance to member groups in gaining official government recognition or in reclaiming church property, particularly in Eastern Europe, the Global Chalice, a newsletter now sent to every English-speaking congregation in the world, including this one. Small grants to struggling member groups, for example, computers for the Philippines and newsletter support for Poland. Emergency support to ailing ministers in some of our poorer member groups. A visiting ministers program. Serving as a clearinghouse and referral service from inquiries from all over the world. Just recently, the development of regional committees to work with local member groups, mostly on a continental basis, to provide support to organize local gatherings, and to spread the word to local congregations about the important work we are doing. And also just recently, the launching of a Friends of the ICUU campaign as both a fundraising tool and as a means of getting more people involved in this work. Other Unitarians from around the world and see how we do our work together. Becoming a member of the ICUU is not just a matter of signing some kind of membership book. Small groups which may be either a single congregation or one made up of several congregations, under the Unitarian label, or sometimes without it, spring up all the time in various parts of the world. When we become aware of them, we gather as much information as we can about them and make contact. If they look legitimate, and they aren't always, we on the board can grant them emerging group status, which usually means some kind of limited material assistance, contact with other Unitarian groups in their region, and an invitation to attend a council meeting as a subsidized observer. If they decide to apply for membership in the ICUU, then we ask them to fill out a rather extensive questionnaire about themselves and send out an observer team to check them out on the ground. If everything looks good, we on the board will recommend to the full council that they be granted provisional membership. This is a status which may extend from 2 to 4 years. This is to ensure that they are indeed a viable group with potential for growth. At the end of this probationary period, they can be granted full membership status by the council, complete with voting privileges. At the moment, we have, in addition to 20 full members, Spain being the latest one to join, one officially designated emerging group in Burundi, and one probationary member in Indonesia. This, then, has been the work of the ICUU. It has been grueling at times and has not been without controversy. It has been also incredibly rewarding. What has made it all work has been the dedication of many people who have given their time, their skills, and themselves to making it all happen. It is they who are the true soul of the ICUU, and you will hear some of their stories when Joy gets up to speak. For now, let me speak only of three people. David Usher, our first president, minister of a Unitarian Universalist church in New Hampshire at the time, and now resident in Great Britain. It was his vision that after much work and many challenges, resulted in the creation of this unique body. There was Jill McAllister, our first treasurer and second president, also from the United States, whose drive, energy, idealism, and excellent fundraising ability helped to move the ICUU from a tabletop body to an increasingly professional service organization. And finally, there is Gordon Oliver from South Africa, our third president, a gentleman who is currently guiding us along our path. In addition to having been present at our founding meeting 11 years ago, I have been a member of the ICUU Executive Committee for 7 years now, 4 as treasurer and 3 as vice president. I have learned a great deal during this time, perhaps the most important being that our chosen faith comes in many forms, and that our North American version of it is but one among many. We have so much to share with one another, which is why our coming together every 2 years is so important. It is one of the few opportunities we have to share our resources, our rituals, and to worship together in ways that transcend our national parochial borders. I feel privileged to have been part of this magnificent effort.
I did have the wonderful privilege, too, of traveling with John and going to the ICUU because both the fact that I had just retired and was able to travel with him at last, and because this was the first open invitation to friends and relatives of people who belong to the ICUU. So when I thought about this sermon today, I thought, well, what was important to me were the people that I sat with and celebrated with every day for 7 days. And so this is some of the memories. But it starts out by my saying that I found out that Theodore Parker was inspired, he was a minister in the U.S., inspired by Ralph Waldo Emerson in the mid-1800s to find the greatness in people. He was passionate about spreading Unitarianism like sunshine out into the world. Unitarianism, he thought, would offer love and justice where conventional Christian-based religions had missed the mark. Parker was ambitious, to say the least, and undoubtedly presumptuous. His heart and his mind were in the right place, but the world, even to this day, has not proved ready for the shifts in thinking it would take to create a compassionate global village. Nevertheless, Parker's dreams lives on in the hearts and minds of at least 100 Unitarians throughout 26 countries of the world. As most of you know, John and I spent a week this last fall with these 100 international Unitarians, and I want to tell you what it meant to me to be in the company of these movers and shakers and dreamers. John has shared with you what the work of the ICU is, so I will tell you how our hearts were touched when we were amongst this amazing representation of international Unitarians. So first, just imagine our setting, the great Montserrat Mountains of Spain, where the earth has built itself up into jagged pink conglomerate columns overhanging a majestic valley outside Barcelona. In the heart of the columns nestles a gentle monastery inviting the world to come and spend a moment with the Lord or with the Spirit of the Virgin Mary. Here was where our International Council of Unitarian and Universalist delegates and families and friends met. As Reverend Philip Hewitt says, we met to aspire to be a world faith and to find out what we still have to accomplish. What a perfect setting in which to find out what we have in common and how our differences can both distinguish us and bind us together. These are some of the people I met. There was Olga, an Indian native of Bolivia, who offered us a PowerPoint presentation of the elements of her earth-centered religion, juxtaposed with her newly embraced Unitarian faith. Olga articulated her poignant story of how the Spanish Christian insurgents obliterated the pagan symbols and forbade her people's worship of God in nature. Olga and a few courageous supporters have embraced Unitarianism because it gives voice to their need for religious freedom and has room for their worship of nature. It was a very powerful PowerPoint presentation. There was John from Italy, who didn't cease to be amazed at my incessant questions and my intensity to pick his brains about how he held 10 to 14-year-olds in the palm of his hand as he took them through a course in the meaning and making of the labyrinths. John is now accepting an invitation to give a workshop at one of our national conferences on how he managed to do this feat. And there was another John from France who engaged with the three women, including myself, in an hour's conversation over lunch about the book he published called Beyond the Father by Mary Daly. The work is about the philosophy of women's liberation. John wanted to know our feelings about the current relevancy of the author's thesis, this being that women need to culturally bond with women in order to discover their empowerment. Being so empowered, he thought, women could influence institutions to move from being repressive to sustaining and nurturing. The hour in conversation was worth 100 hours of theoretical study on this subject. What was most notable was that John was going to excuse himself to let the three of us women have our woman-to-woman bonding experience over lunch. Instead, I insisted that he was welcome to stay. I didn't know the other women, and I didn't ask them for their endorsement of my invitation to John, but I knew that Unitarian women are up for mixed gender conversations. And there was Anastasia from Russia and Czeslaw from Poland, each lone Unitarians from post-communist countries looking for ICUU support. It was a very poignant experience for me to see both Anastasia and Czeslaw grappling with the idea that in order to support them in their quest to evangelize and gather followers, they had to show evidence of national membership. I was so proud of John, my John, and his executive for the way they used their best mediation skills to listen, to explain day after day the process for the membership. And still they are in dialogue over this through the internet. There were new friends, Botan, Ishvan, and Sandor from Romania, each very articulate lay and ordained leaders, respectively, who shared their joys and challenges of making Unitarianism relevant and vibrant for their members, who struggle to catch up with the modern world, a world not unlike ours that no longer respects precious time to reflect on the meaning of life and our role in making the world a better place. They were proud to invite us to next year's theology symposium in Colosvar, Romania, at which I believe Katie's planning to go. There was Jaime from Spain, who proudly affirmed that his country had joined the Small League of Nations that recently made gay and lesbian marriages a legal rite of passage. And there were others among us, Christian Unitarians, who have not caught up with this much liberal thinking, who strain to understand the need for this inclusive legislation. It was challenging and rewarding for me to engage in that conversation through the barriers of language, unfamiliar accents, and differing world views on the subject of marriage. Not one person presented a fundamentalist perspective, not even me. I thought I would just be really hard on them about how they should think, you see. There was an amazing conversation I had with Lillian from Tierra del Fuego, Argentina, and Lilia from New York. Both of them were good friends of each other, and both knew my John from past conferences. They had enormous curiosity about what John's wife would be like. Having observed me unwittingly for 6 days, they decided that John had chosen well. At a breakfast meal, the three of us happenstanced together and discovered that we had one or more common personal journeys and mystical experiences, each having to let go of men we loved because they were gay, and having suffered through the loss of a child. I found this extraordinary, and so did they. What became most meaningful to me was Lillian's and Lilia's observation that I had obviously triumphed over my painful journeys. And we talked for a magical hour about how we each found our strength to move on. Lilia is writing a self-help book about how to survive a marriage to a gay partner and suggested that one day she would invite me to go on a speaking tour with her. And lastly, as John mentioned, David Usher, the first president of the ICUU, I want to tell you a little bit about him. David told us the story of how the ICUU got started. David sparked an idea in me as he told the story, that going out for coffee with a friend could actually become a kind of religious practice. There are no distractions when you and your friend are face to face over coffee and will dare to witness each other's growing edges and salve each other's fears, or challenge each other's complacency. So David told how the ICUU came about over one such coffee conversation. He said, "My friend was asking me about Unitarianism and asked particularly about it internationally. He then asked what organization there was to bring all of these national groups together, and I had to confess that there was no such thing apart from the IARF, which acted as a de facto way." And he said something like, "So, this religion of yours, which espouses such fine international sentiments, gives no practical expression to those sentiments?" David continued, "So I went away and brooded over that and then enlisted 11 ministerial colleagues to sponsor a motion for the 1987 British annual meetings, calling for discussions with Unitarians around the world about setting up such an organization. David explained to us that he had no clear blueprint for his vision. He put forward various models for discussion, but was not particularly wedded to any of them. He was in near tears, however, as he summarized for us, this 10 years later, the result of that coffee chat. He said that with a lot of help from his inspired colleagues, the ICUU is much stronger and more active and influential than he could ever have hoped for. Just look around the room, he said, at the people who are here and at the walls of writing to show what we have accomplished. I must mention that on the walls also was the shadows of the elephants in the room, the elephants that John spoke of, the elephants of who's going to keep paying for this and how do we all get membership. The issues that raise their challenging heads were there, but no great work is without its elephants, and the members were willing to acknowledge their presence and hopefully reduce the shadow. David asked us to look at all that and feel it deeply. These are only a few samplings of the many meaningful engagements I had with people from 6 continents and 26 countries, and I was the lucky one. They could speak my language. Many were the courageous ones. They afforded the trip with very modest budgets. They triumphed over culture and language differences. They came from countries that had to hear the hard facts that their national numbers did not yet qualify them for international membership. But they have new hope for their involvement in the Friends program that John was showing you and that you can read about later after the service. At the outset of this presentation, I quoted Philip Hewitt, and I said, I'll repeat again, that he said, what brings us together here is a vision of a global fellowship of Unitarians and Universalists which will transcend all differences of place. I would like to add that what will keep us together and help us grow globally is the commitment of our liberal religious faith to speak our personal truths, to tell our cultural stories, to bring our different symbols and spiritual practices to a common worship table in a community of predominantly shared values, and above all, in a secure environment of safety and respect. It's the safety and respect that was there that week, and that was what helped us transcend our differences. As a privileged Unitarian myself, I was humbled by my counterpart's continuous long-suffering history of struggling for the right to question conventional religious beliefs. It is in great part due to the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists that they hold fast to their vision of religious freedom. As you heard John describe, the Council provides resource materials, mentorship, communication technology, support visits, symposium opportunities, organizational support, a visiting minister's program, and it helps remove the geographic fences by providing opportunities to bring great Unitarians from all over the world together to share what we have in common and be enriched by our culture and religious diversity. This newest program of Friends came to fruition at this conference. Our $50 membership supports the program, enables us to make Unitarian connections to each other when we travel, and gives us the opportunity to help with the work of the ICUU as non-voting participants. So, I am committed to staying connected with my new international Unitarian friends. Fortunately, all those who were there are on email, and I've been writing to many of them. Becoming a friend to the ICUU offers me spiritual growth beyond my national borders. And becoming a friend allows me to recognize and respond to the salient differences of Unitarian worship and to give attentive focus to the importance of supporting a global Unitarian fellowship. So I hope you too will think about becoming a friend of the ICUU and help spread Theodore Parker's Unitarian sunshine all over the world. Thank you.